Amazon Video comes to the iPad. The Backpack 2, free mobile data. iWork beta now dead. Nexus Q goes back to the drawing board. And an iCloud tip. It's Thursday, August 2nd, 2012, and this is iWeek. I'm Tim Chatton, and this is what's going on in the Apple world today. Good morning, and welcome to another edition of iWeek. Kicking off the show today is the very surprising news, to me at least, that Amazon has released a new app for streaming their video content to the iPad. It also allows you to download it for offline viewing. This paves the way, in my mind, for an Apple TV version of this, as well as we finally have Hulu on the Apple TV. That took a while, but I think because it was on the iPad first, that's why it ended up making it there. The app for Amazon allows Prime members to stream eligible content for free. It also lets you download purchased or rented content from your video library, which is very similar to Apple's purchase tab of the store, except Amazon's actually lets you stream it. A big, big difference there. TV season passes will be ready to go on your iPad, ready to stream the day after shows are completed versus Apple, where you have to download them. Overall, a pretty basic app. No search quite yet, but it's a nice app to have, and just version one, and it'll get better from here on out. Amazon was the big holdout in my mind, and I thought Amazon didn't want anything to do with Apple's hardware. So it is really, really encouraging to see them on the iPad with this app. So I'm glad I was wrong here. The iPad is now the ultimate video streaming tablet. It should be noted here that AirPlay is currently blocked with the Amazon app, so you'll need to AirPlay from your Mac to get it up on your TV still. The iPad will not do that. This seems to be a really cool thing Amazon's doing, and a direct attack upon Netflix and iTunes. And this makes for three competitive moves this week. First with iTunes Match competitor that I talked about yesterday, and now with the Netflix iTunes thing. The app letting you stream purchases is a big deal. Apple forces you to download them, which can take hours. For many, that would leave Amazon as the better solution, as I believe this even works over 3G, which would definitely be a no-no for Apple's service. And it's a real sad thing, because I use iTunes and I'm going to stick with iTunes, but I just hope the media companies can allow Apple to let us stream content from the iTunes store. So hopefully it's coming, and I'm hopeful Apple will figure this out. Another big announcement to hit yesterday is that of the Backpack 2 by 12 South. According to the 9to5 Mac, 12 South has announced a major update to its backpack shelf for the Apple TV, or not the Apple TV, it's the backpack shelf for the Apple iMac and Apple displays. The backpack has always been the most intuitive Apple desktop shelf. It's an accessory that lets you keep a hard drive or other components behind your display. You can even store like a Mac Mini or an Apple TV back there, or an AirPort Express. The Backpack 2 introduces a couple new major enhancements. First up is vertical support pegs. These new pegs allow you to store items without worrying about them tipping over. Additionally, the new pegs allow you to keep a smaller notebook computer like a MacBook Air behind your desktop, which is really, really big. Basically, if you have a Thunderbolt display, you now put it behind your desktop out of sight, which is really neat. Also has rails for cable management and the ability to use the shelf in front of your desktop rather than just the back. This makes it much more convenient to store accessories that a user needs to access more readily, such as a wireless keyboard, mouse, or trackpad. The Backpack 2 costs $35 and is available from their website at 12south.com. The accessory supports both the iMac and the Thunderbolt display. Next up is a new company that is offering free mobile data. Freedom Pop over at freedompop.com basically will give you 500 megabytes of free data. For $100, you can get started by ordering, or pre-ordering, I should say, an iPod Touch 4 or iPhone 4/4S case that comes with the Freedom Pop service. The data that you get from Freedom Pop is shared over Wi-Fi through this case so that you'll be up and running with up to 8 devices at a single time. So what do you get data-wise? So I already said 500 megabytes is free, but you can get up to 1 gigabyte of data for free if you are good at referring friends. Everyone, as I said, gets 500 megabytes free every month, and there's no limit there. No contract, no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. If you want additional capacity, just $10 per gig. So for 10 bucks, you're at 1.5 gigs, which is really, really nice. And what I've been hearing is that's actually pretty good data. So besides that point, the iPod Touch, in my mind, is a pretty sweet low-cost phone for many technical people. For $300, you can have an iPod Touch with 500 megabytes of service every month. I could see kids flocking to this as it's free data, and this would let you do Skype and things like that, iMessage all the time. Time will tell if the service is good enough to depend on and how battery life is with this case. The site does note that you do get 4G, real 4G on the iPhone, up to 15 times faster than 3G, and it will extend your iPhone's battery life up to 6 hours. So they appear to be saying that both of the concerns I had aren't really concerns. Anyways, you can pre-order yours today over at freedompop.com. Next up is The Verge reporting on some interesting things coming out of the Samsung-Apple lawsuit. This time around, it's on the design process at Apple. The site reports that a 17-year-old veteran, or not 17-year-old, but someone that's been with the company 17 years, Stranger, stated that he's been involved with every single product the company had to release since 1995 due to how closely the design team works. We work as a team, he told Apple counsel Harold McHenry, describing that Apple design teams meet every week to discuss all ongoing projects. When asked what the group's job at the company is, it's simple. Our job is to imagine products that don't exist and guide the process that brings them to life. When asked about the original iPhone, he states that the team's goal was to build a new, original, and beautiful object that was so wonderful that you couldn't imagine how you'd follow it. The designers wanted to make something that people can love. Stranger stated that Steve Jobs himself had doubts about the device before it announced and shipped and even launched, and that Cupertino faced many production problems and challenges, from the steel band to the holes drilled into the glass front. Eventually he said, "We just solved the engineering issues." There's much more of the story over on The Verge, linked to in the show notes at iWakePodcast.com. Meanwhile, Johnny Ive spoke a bit about the iPhone and how it almost didn't come to market. According to Johnny, "We nearly shelved the iPhone because we thought there were fundamental problems that we couldn't solve. With the early prototypes, I held the phone to my ear, and my ear would dial the number. You would have to detect all sorts of ear shapes and chin shapes, skin color, and hairdo. That was one of the many examples where we thought, perhaps we can't make this work. But as all we know, Apple did figure this out, and we have some pretty wonderful phones as a result." In other news, I just want to spend a moment reminding everyone that iWork Beta is now dead for good. So basically, if you go to iWork.com, it redirects to Apple.com. Many of the features are now found on iCloud.com, but sharing files is still something Apple has not implemented. Now onto some competitor news. First up is some news regarding OpenWebOS, which I wouldn't call a competitor quite yet. Apparently, it won't run on the old official WebOS hardware, like the Touchpad or Pre 3. The Post blames the existing hardware's many proprietary components, including graphics, networking, and lack of driver for a modern kernel. Despite having access to these proprietary drivers, it appears HP isn't willing to make them available to the OpenWebOS project. It's a shame, as I have a ton of official HP or WebOS devices that are now at their final version thanks to the proprietary stuff. In other news is Microsoft. They're continuing their summer of news. The company has released Outlook.com. Outlook.com takes over Hotmail in a new metro kind of way. There is much to say about Outlook, but quite frankly, I don't see myself using this at all. There is a wonderful write-up over at The Verge for those interested. It's linked to in the show notes at iWakePodcast.com. The one thing I will say about this is Microsoft seems to be pulling all of its services together. So you'll get Skype, SkyDrive, and more all in Outlook, which is pretty cool. You, of course, get an Outlook.com email address for signing up. Next up is a rather big piece of news for people tired of carriers overcharging its consumers for data we already pay for. According to Macworld, Verizon Wireless has agreed to pay $1.25 million to the United States Federal Communications Commission to resolve a complaint that it blocked third-party tethering apps on Android phones. Verizon's request for Google to block third-party tethering apps on the Android store violated open internet or net neutrality rules approved by the commission for the so-called C block of spectrum in the 700 megahertz band. According to the complaint filed in June of 2011 by digital rights group Free Press, the FCC approved the net neutrality conditions as part of a spectrum auction completed in early 2008. So this could be why the iPad LTE version on Verizon has tethering on every plan. Hopefully this means the next iPhone on Verizon will have that same thing where tethering just comes with it as it should be. Now if only AT&T would get a similar punishment, and hopefully this won't be a problem by next year. Before getting into the closing stories, we have a bit to talk about on the Nexus Q, that little Google orb. It is getting a delay. According to Google, when we announced Nexus Q at Google I.O., we gave away devices to attendees for an early preview. The industrial design and hardware were met with great enthusiasm. We heard initial feedback from users that they want Nexus Q to do even more than it does today, probably because it does almost nothing. Google, in response, has decided to postpone the consumer launch of the Nexus Q while they work on making it even better. On a brighter note, those that did pre-order the device are getting it absolutely free of charge in this kind of beta stage of hardware and software. I'm not sure if the hardware could be up or the software could be upgraded on this beta hardware. Only time will tell there. I'm not shocked by this, as the Nexus Q does very, very little. I expect the new Nexus Q to work without an Android phone and come with a remote and be more like an Apple TV competitor than its current iteration is. Closing out this show are two things I want to talk about. The first is an iCloud tip. I had a realization that as I continue my project of moving everything to the Mac App Store and iCloud, that there are a few apps that won't make the cut into the App Store. My realization is this. With iCloud documents in TextEdit, I can create a few documents where I jot down serial numbers and link to the software that isn't in the App Store. I've since created three documents and put them in the folder entitled Non-App Store. I put all this in my iCloud part of TextEdit, so when you log into your Mac for the very first time setting up a brand new machine, these documents will be available almost instantaneously. The documents are entitled Paid, Free, and Essential. The paid document, I list out all of my serials and apps that I own. The free document, I link to the free apps I have. The most important one, I feel, though, is the Essential document. Here I list out the must-have apps that aren't in the App Store. Whether they be free or paid, they are in this document with the links and serials required. Doing this will enable you to get up and running rather quickly. Once you log into your iCloud account, you'll have access to these documents in TextEdit, and it's, in my mind, the best way to store your non-App Store purchases. So that's the realization I had. I just wanted to share that with you. Last up today is pick of the week. An iTunes pick of the week, that is. Total Recall recently got a big remastering for Blu-ray just prior to it coming as a remake in theaters. This remastering for Blu-ray also came out for iTunes. It is now being featured by Apple and sold for $15 as an HD copy in 1080p. I just watched this version, and it is beautiful as Total Recall will get. The movie is much better than I remember it being, and I'd imagine it'll be much better than this remake coming out this month, because the original was a classic. Directed by Paul Verhoeven, music by Jerry Goldsmith, with Arnold Schwarzenegger, an awesome movie. So, anyways, I'd highly encourage you to pick this title up. Well, that's what's going on in the Apple world today. If you like this show, please head over to iTunes and leave a review. Also, I do this thing called I Wake Again over at iwakepodcast.com/again. All the information and how to sign up is on that page, iwakepodcast.com/again. Join me tomorrow for another edition of I Wake. Aloha.